Do you need logos or custom designs for your small business? Then contact Pete from Diamond Graphic Studios today at diamondgraphicstudios@gmail.com. That's Diamond spelt D-Y-M-O-N-D, graphicstudios@gmail.com for your free quote. Diamond Graphic Studios, a proud sponsor of the Brand Podcast and Magazine, available online at thebrandmedia.uk or your favourite podcast player. Hello, welcome one and all. Thank you for listening to what is the fifth episode of The Brand Podcast, the podcast by creative-minded people, made for and about creative-minded people. I am Pete Davis. Now, before I introduce my guest, I'd first like to thank the producer of the podcast, Daryl, for rescuing me on the previous episode. Armed with a new microphone, I somehow managed to record on my headset's internal microphone, therefore causing him all manner of stress and a lot of extra problems in putting out last month's show, to be honest with you. So at least I can say that one of us is professional. And talking of professionals, joining me today is someone who, along with their cohorts, had one of the largest and loudest of UK small press publishers in the mid to late 2010s, Mallius Comics. And in recent months, after around 7 years of lettering, has stepped into the professional realm as a freelance letterer. Now, you may have seen his works, the books from the likes of Image Comics, Heavy Metal Magazine, American Gothic Press, Marcosia, BHP Comics, and also one of the hotter indie publishers at the moment, Scout Comics. So talking to me today is someone who is a very vocal member of the UK comic scene, Mr. Rob Jones. How are you, Rob?
I'm okay, thank you very much. Yeah, not too bad.
How have you been coping with the last year or so, especially considering, you know, you're involved in our healthcare system in the UK in some way, or you were for so long in some way, shape or form?
I worked social care. So I worked with adults with, up until March, worked with adults with learning disabilities and mental health problems. So that was fun.
Yeah, I'll bet right on the front line this last year.
Yeah, it makes me laugh. People complain about wearing a mask for 5 minutes in the shop. And you're doing 14-hour shifts in full PPE.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're having to try and explain to people that, no, they can't just go to the shop. Or just go into town and go to McDonald's and things like that, because obviously there is a pandemic. So yeah, it was tough and difficult. I actually changed jobs.
Within the healthcare industry, I take it, yeah?
Yeah, switch roles. And then I was kind of month and a half into the new job, and lettering was kind of coming thick and fast. So talked it over with my partner, and she just told me to do it. She just said, you should do it.
Brilliant.
So I did.
Excellent. And I guess from a health side of things and a mental health side of things, I'd imagine there was an awful lot off your mind there, you know, to think I've stepped out of that world where the way things are and the amount of people who will shout at you because they've seen a video on YouTube. We're not going to get too political today, I promise you. But it must be nice to be able to step away from that, like you say, for your own personal mental health.
Yeah. Last November, I felt pretty broken. Like the job was really wearing me down. You know, and everything else. And so it was a case of keeping on top of like my own mental health when you're trying to keep, you know what I mean? Like 17, I think it was 17 people lived in the place where I used to work, trying to keep their mental health up. You know what I mean? And obviously dealing with low points in their mental health and you're trying to deal with your own mental health and not being able to see people, not being able to see friends, not being able to see family. It's been a really, really difficult thing to deal with. And, you know, the staff all kind of rally together. But again, it's really hard because you're all, you know what I mean? As much as you try to say to people, we're all in the same boat, you know, at least the people we're supporting have got people around them kind of like 24 hours a day. And they're seeing different faces and stuff like that. Admittedly, those faces are covered in masks and everything else and stuff like that. But they're there and they're there specifically to try and make sure that they're okay. And so I can't imagine what it's been like for a lot of people who've had nobody.
No.
It's been a tough old year and a bit for everybody.
It has, mate. It has. Well, I'd like to take you back in time to a time where viruses and lockdowns would have only existed in science fiction stories rather than real life. So back in 2014, imagine a younger Rob Jones. He decided to get involved in creating comic books. Not long out of university and fresh from a time when you were writing about comic books, and interviewing creators like Derek Robertson, Cullen Bunn, and Sean Murphy on the website Intercomics. And then you decided you wanted to start creating. Now, can you tell us about what drove you to the madness in many respects of actually deciding you wanted to create comic books? And if and how those comic professionals I've just mentioned, you know, did they help and inspire you through the interviews and any advice you may have received speaking to them?
Right. So I can tell you what made me want to write comics was writing about them. I decided to frame the start of one of my articles as a script of John Constantine going into a bar, having a drink of whiskey, lighting up a cigarette and having a scrap.
Okay.
When I published that one, a lot of people were like, what issue is that from? Well, it's not. I wrote it. And so you kind of sat there going, huh, all right. So I could write this. You know what I mean? I can write something that people genuinely think is from a John Constantine comic.
Right.
You know what I mean? From a Hellblazer comic. And so I thought, well, bugger it. I'm going to have a crack. You know what I mean? And obviously I was really lucky to interview people like Derek Robertson. You know what I mean? David Hine and Fabrice Sapolsky, they co-wrote the Spider-Man Noir series for Marvel. And David Hine's done a lot of stuff for Image as well. I think he's adapted a lot of Victor Hugo's stuff, if I remember rightly.
Okay.
And David Hine, him and Fabrice were fantastic to interview. And then I saw David Hine at Thought Bubble. I can't remember what year. It all blurs into one at times. But I saw him like a year, that, like I think it was probably the same year I interviewed him. So probably 2014, 2015. And he just said, you should just go for it. You know, so I went, all right then. And just kind of, like I say, gone from there. You see a lot of things, obviously, on social media where people say about like getting into comics. You just got to make comics. And it is, and it sounds so simple. You're like, you know, that's what you've got to do. But like, basically, you've got to give it a crack and see what you can do. See, like, find like-minded people. Like, I do a lot of co-writing. So it's effectively like myself and my really good friend, Mike Sandbrook, we co-write a lot of stuff together. And that seems to negate the need for an editor.
Right. Okay.
So we'll do that and we'll mash our ideas together.
Yeah.
So we initially started off. Mike was going to draw something and wrote a script, and he didn't draw it in the end. And then he was passing ideas to it. And I just said to her, you know, I can't remember if it was me, sorry, or him, but we just decided basically to write together. And that's what we did. And we started writing stuff. Started writing. The first comic we ever wrote was something called Grimm, which was kind of a detective noir horror mutant story. Kind of, and then we decided to maybe try a hand at Future Shocks, which is like the 2000 AD shorts that they do. So we wrote a lot of shorter scripts, like 5-6 page scripts, and turned that into an anthology series, which took the name of the column I used to write for Intercomics.
Okay.
Because obviously this is the brand podcast, and the fact was, obviously, people knew me, however many, even if it was just 15, 20, you know, four people, whatever, it knew me from writing a thing called Paper Cuts and Ink Stains for Intercomics. And so my thinking was, Paper Cuts and Ink Stains was the name of the thing, name of the article I used to write. So therefore, if I'm doing this anthology series and we're doing it ourselves, it would be good luck to kind of carry that over.
It's tied into your name already, isn't it? So, yeah.
The recognition's there. You know what I mean? So that was the thinking then at the time. And it just seemed like, for me, it seemed like a good name. You know what I mean? Obviously, making comics and everything else. And obviously, making comics involves a lot of paper, which could lead to paper cuts and probably ink stains. So you know what I mean? So it just seemed like a good name. I seem to remember, actually, it was, I used to run Twitter polls a lot when I was writing.
Yeah.
And I seem to, I swear somebody picked that, as in like, or somebody suggested it. And I can't remember their name now. And I feel like a charlatan. for not remembering it, but I do seem to remember somebody picking that name. There were different names, because I get people to pick what comics I should read, because I was quite a late bloomer to comics. I read them when I was younger, but never really things like Marvel, DC. I never really dipped my toes with like Image or Vertigo and stuff like that when I was younger. I read the Beano and the Dandy growing up. My mum and dad ran a newsagent, so they were kind of there at a Saturday morning. But started off reading those, and I dipped my toes. I used to collect Warhammer. Used to read something called Warhammer Monthly, which was I think it was their first comic line they did back when I was 13. But like getting to about 27 and really deep diving back into comics in a big way, I was getting people to pick what series I should buy and read and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun, because you were involving people in your choices of what you should do. And people love that kind of stuff. You know, people love to get involved.
In what
other people do and stuff like that. So, yeah, it seemed like a really good way of doing it. And then obviously meeting like-minded people. It was a case of you'd meet like-minded people. There'd be hashtags. I think it was someone called Sketchfuel and other things like that. People would post hashtags and you meet and chat and you could start devising comics between you and stuff like that. And so that's kind of how things started out.
It sort of took over from the old boards on Mark Miller's website and stuff like that, I guess, in many respects. Yeah. Looking back to 2014, I noticed that originally it looked like you were called Average Joe Comics.
We started with doing a comic called Average Joe, and we did the first issue. I co-wrote it with a gent called Leon McKenzie. Leon does a fair whack of stuff now. I'm trying to remember the comics he does. I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, to be entirely honest.
It's amazing how many of these names that you kind of forget, to be honest with you.
Yeah, sometimes it's the problem, isn't it? You meet and work and talk about working with a lot of people. But yeah, Average Joe, we did the first issue of that. But Brad's been very, very busy working, although he is working on a new thing with his brother-in-law, a new comic. Okay, cool. That's good. I'm going to be lettering that. And stuff, so that's going to be quite fun. But yeah, we started off with that, and it started off as Average Joe. And then speaking with Brad and then Mike and then Nick Gonzo, we kind of started talking about a brand, I suppose, effectively, a brand, like a kind of not a publisher. We didn't ever want to be a publisher. We wanted just like a kind of a group, kind of umbrella name,
right,
for a lot of kind of like-minded individuals. And being British and, you know what I mean, like going thin line between madness and genius and stuff like that. And you go, Maddius Comics. There you go.
And that's how it started.
That's how it happened.
Well, while you were, at the same time as you were building those universes, and as I say, we'll get back to Maddius a bit later, very quietly, you were building another brand yourself, to be perfectly honest with you, that at the time, I don't think I realised just quite how much work you were actually doing at that time. And that was your own Rob Jones lettering brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whilst Maddius was like going to a huge fireworks display, you kind of started your lettering other people's comics. It was a much smaller affair, to be honest with you, from what I could see.
We needed a letterer, and I thought I could do it. So I could do that. How hard can it be?
Well, the funny thing is, you say, how hard could it be? But looking at it, you were kind of lettering sort of 10 plus books a year from 2015. Less than a year after sort of starting. I was looking at the list of comics that you were lettering, a lot of them obviously within the small press, but it was mixed in with stuff for Heavy Metal Magazine and American Gothic Press. It seems odd that you went from, you know, a standing start, like you say, of not really knowing what you were doing. Within a year or so, you're lettering for the likes of Marcosia, who are, you know, one of the larger British publications, and for The Phantom, you know, which everybody must remember The Phantom.
It's dumb luck. I'm not going to sit there and say, you know what I mean, it was a kind of calculated kind of thing. It's all been dumb luck, and I've been very, very, very lucky. I've been very lucky to work with people who have recommended me for jobs. I've been very lucky to work with people who have suggested me for jobs, you know what I mean, or have gone on to do other bits. And so, yeah, it's been a case of I've kind of lucked my way through.
We all need some of that Rob Jones luck.
Well, and you kind of sit back and, like I say, I was actually archiving onto my portable hard disk drive the other week and looking at stuff, and you're looking back going, Jesus, you know, when you don't quite realize how many comics you've lettered, how many things you've done. And it was really quite eye-opening, I suppose. You know what I mean? Obviously, the sheer amount of things I've worked on and the different types of comics that I've worked on, because I've done stuff from the Bruns, and hopefully, you know what I mean, Scottish people will be there going, oh my God, he's butchering. I've done the Bruns and Our Woolly.
I didn't know that.
I did that for a little while. I did that the Scottish Sunday Post, I believe. Yeah, I did that because a gent named Philip Vaughan, who is a lecturer at Dundee University, obviously, where there's a great kind of, there's a comics courses there. There's individuals coming out of Dundee University that are working for like 2000 AD now, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. He knew the editor of Commando, and he suggested me for, I did 8 Commando books. I think it was. What was nice was I was the first letterer to get to use sound effects for Commando Comics. They reissued Ramsey's Raiders. The cover was by Ian Kennedy. It was done in color, reissued it. They started, they've carried on, obviously. They carried on without me, which is fine. I got to use sound effects, which was really cool. Obviously, this is a publication that's been going for, you know, 50, 60 years. And so getting to use like color sound effects and stuff like that was great, you know. And obviously, again, that was just luck. I didn't go chasing for it. You know what I mean? I wasn't sat there going, I'm going to gun for this. And all of it has been just word of mouth and people passing stuff on to other people and suggesting, oh, Rob might be good for that. And you know what I mean? And yeah. I suppose sometimes goodwill.
Well, I think they say, you know, you make your own luck, don't they? And I think there's a lot of truth in that, in the respect that if you hadn't put yourself out there and put in the work and put in good work, you wouldn't have got those lucky breaks. Without you actually proactively going out and doing stuff, if you'd have just sat back and thought, it'll fall into my lap, it won't happen. And I can say that as somebody who has done that far too many times, you know, certainly over the last 7 or 8 years. And you need to get out there and do these things. And so, yes, there's a lot of luck. But like you say, you've made a lot of that luck yourself by getting out there and doing it. And I mean, it sounds like from what you're saying, because one of my questions was, you know, was it something that you were learning on the job? As I say, because in 2015, you couldn't letter, or 2014, you couldn't letter. By 2017, you've lettered 30, 40 comics. And I was wondering, you know, or did you take up a course, or was it just something you just thought, I'm just going to learn on the job? Because I remember having a conversation with you, because I kind of thought to myself, it can't be that difficult. I thought the same thing when I was working on a book myself. And I remember you talking about, you know, there's an art of lettering. There's a lot of work that goes into it. You know, all the kerning and leading and all the rest of it. You've got to know these things. You've got to know what works. And, you know, was it something you just simply learned, or did you look to past masters at it, or did you take some courses?
I've never taken a course. It's been a case of trial and error with a lot of it. Right. I got my first kind of tips from Dan Butcher, who does Vanguard Comic, yep, and obviously the Awesome Comics podcast. Dan Butcher gave me a load of tips.
It's always good to mention Dan on a thing, because he will definitely promote it then.
Yeah.
So if we just keep saying Dan Butcher, I love you, Dan.
He gave me my first kind of pointers about it, you know what I mean? Like point size for fonts and stuff like this. Initially, I started out using Photoshop, and then Brad, who we've mentioned earlier, Brad is a professional graphic designer. He sets stuff up for all sorts of stuff. He works for a print company. He is fantastic at it. He got me going with Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator, or Adobe, whichever way it's pronounced. Yeah. He got me going with that. And he gave me some pointers and tips. And also Nick Gonzo as well. He was fantastic in helping me get started, because Nick's knowledge of comics is endless. And his recall on stuff and everything else, and obviously styles and things like that, is fantastic. And so I had some good pointers from very good people. And then I started looking at things like Blambot's website. And Blambot's website has a really good section on, you know, comic book do's and don'ts with regards to lettering.
Yeah.
Jim Campbell's got some great how-tos with regards to lettering and stuff like that. So that was really, really helpful. And then there's YouTube videos by people like Scott McLeod, obviously the sculptor and stuff like that, which again were really, really helpful. But it's been a case of, I suppose, trying to evolve my own style, get my own eye, you know, cut my own teeth on it, and obviously learn to get my eye in for placement and stuff like that. And it's been working with really good editors who can spot stuff and say, well, hang on, why not move it there? Or artists as well, obviously, who will know what they want with the page.
Yeah.
And they'll sit there and they'll point to, obviously, perhaps move it into the dead space there, do this and stuff like that. And obviously you take stuff, you learn stuff, you take constructive criticism. And what you do is you then channel that and focus that into making the next project better and so on and so forth. So again, I've always had a kind of an interest, I suppose, in kind of graphic. I used to make posters for, like, my dad was area manager for like the National Federation of Retail News Agency. He'd get me to knock posters up on the family PC and stuff like that, which is a lot of fun. You know, the strange thing for a 13, 14 year old to consider fun, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. But that's what I do. I'd help him out and stuff. And kind of like I say, it's always, I've always enjoyed doing stuff like that. And obviously I designed the logo for the Intercomics column. That's the word. Intercomics column that I used to write. I used to do all the graphics that I used on there as well.
Okay.
And stuff. So I'd do like if I'd do a Christmas special, I always had a header. I'd have a Christmas-themed header. I'd have a Halloween-themed header, stuff like that.
So all this sort of stuff was being done, to be honest with you, before you even started lettering or were involved in writing. So, you know, it sounds like, it, as you say, a lot of learning on the job, but you'd been learning for many years.
Yeah, I suppose. So. There was kind of a foundation.
Yeah.
Yes, you know what I mean? A foundation of knowledge. And it was then taking everything else and then starting to apply that to comic pages.
We could say that your dad actually outsourced his work to you.
Yeah.
Because I've often thought to myself about trying to get my kids to do certain jobs, you know, colouring and things like that, to make my life easier. So what your dad did there really was a lot of ingenuity, I guess.
I suppose so, yeah.
So, yeah, brilliant.
Side, yeah. Well, I never thought of it that way. Sweat labour is what he
exactly,
got.
Exactly, yeah.
And I designed a poster.
Were you getting paid well? I mean, you know.
No.
No. And he probably had you delivering papers and everything.
I did two paper rounds every morning before school.
I think somebody's due a nice big Christmas present, Rob.
No, it's fine.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, you seem to have been lettering sort of 10 plus books a year for lots of publishers, lots of small press. And in 2017, as I say, those early years, looking at the list, as I say, you seem to have doubled your productivity that year. You know, within 3 years, you know, as I say, loads and loads of books. But then it was in 2018 that we seem to have seen sort of bigger opportunities for yourself and your brand as a letterer. Now, it looked like you got the job on Kiltopia, obviously done very well within British comics. And that kind of went from a small press, was it Card Shark Comics publisher?
BHP.
BHP Comics. So you started working with them. And then you've already mentioned Commando Comics, obviously, you know, classic British comics magazine.
Yep.
And then onto an Image comics book. I mean, what do you think prompted that step up that year, you know, to the point where, like you say, you're suddenly working on, I'm going to say the third biggest publisher, but to be honest with you, right now, they could even argue they're bigger than the third big, you know, numbers might say different, but...
Again, that was Steve Thompson, the guy who was editor for 24 Panels. He reached out to me and was saying, obviously, they needed the... I mean, it's like, I was going to downplay it, but it's a page in a car, you know what I mean? It's a page in a book that's got Alan Moore in it. And obviously it was to be done in a not strictly typical kind of lettering style. And so okay. I did a couple of different passes for it. I had ones where there were balloons. I had ones where there were things that kind of like pseudo like balloons for everything where you'd have like kind of corners of the balloons and a tail and stuff like that. So I did a lot of different takes for that. And like I say, he approached me about it, and I just kind of jumped at the chance because it was Image.
Of course, yeah.
To be honest with you, you know what I mean? There was no kind of like, oh, well, do what I was going, yes, get that credit in my portfolio.
Definitely.
So that was fantastic, to be honest with you, to be asked, you know, and obviously, I guess, I don't know, maybe Jim Campbell was busy that day. It was a real honor to do that. And obviously something that was going towards helping people. You know, obviously, all the proceeds from 24 Panels went to helping survivors, obviously, of the Grenfell Tower fire, and obviously those suffering with PTSD and things like that. So, you know what I mean? It was a no-brainer to say yes to that. And obviously, like I say, Kiltopia was fantastic to work on. It was a great book. It still is a great book, you know what I mean? Albeit with Mika Myers lettering it out. Mika's a fantastic letterer. So he's a really nice guy from what interactions I've had with him and from what I hear other people say as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously, what's quite nice is, I suppose, about the kind of lettering community is we're not at each other's throats.
Well, there seems to be plenty of work to go around, to be honest with you, Rob.
There is a lot, you know, and obviously, again, what you do is, obviously, if your schedule's really full, you can pass people's names along for books and things like that, you know. So obviously it's about kind of helping each other out, which is good, which is what a community should be about. And obviously comics is a community. It's not just the books, it's the community, you know what I mean? We talk about the comic book community, and the community helps one another. You'll step in and things like that to kind of lighten people's loads and stuff. So
well, I've noticed you doing that recently, to be honest with you. I've noticed a couple of posts, you know, you saying my diary's full, and you've actually redirected two other letters just recently. So
yeah, you know, which again, that's because it's paid it back in kind. That's happened to me. So to kind of sit there and receive that level of kindness and then not want to repay that and pass that on, it'd be a bit of an ass move.
And I think that also plays in when you talked about luck earlier on, you know, that's making your own luck. That's, like you say, being a good person, paying those favors back. to me, that is you making your own luck, because they will look at it and say, oh, Rob Jones got me this job because obviously he was busy, but he's thought about me. So next time I'm busy, I'm going to think about him. So, I mean, that's, you know, like you say, good community to be in. Now, talking about, I guess, the role of a letterer, and obviously we've mentioned Image, we've mentioned BHP, you know, the Commando comics, et cetera, going all the way through to the small press stuff that you've done. Do you find any sort of major differences, good or bad, working on a small press book or compared to, you know, the BHP or Image or whoever? Obviously, Scout Comics is another one. Is there more micromanagement from one or another, or does it depend on the editor or writer, you know, or is it just book to book?
It does vary very wildly book to book. You get some people who are very confident in your skills. So they'll sit back and they will let you lean into stuff and not question every decision you've made as a letterer and stuff like that. You will get other times where you have people who try to, I suppose, micromanage the book. But then my way of thinking is, it's their book.
Right.
All right, they've contracted me to provide the lettering. But, you know, sometimes people have a very specific vision for how their book should look. And you always, I will always try my hardest to make sure that I play into that, to make sure that my lettering style fits the artwork. Something I've learned, especially since probably like 2017, 2018, is obviously differentiating styles of balloons and strokes on your balloons and stuff like that, and everything else, and regular balloons. And you can probably see if you look at the stuff that I've done over the years where all of a sudden I've learned something new.
Yeah.
And then suddenly that's on about three or four different books. So on and so forth. So learning to kind of, I suppose, diversify the way my stuff looks has been a big thing. But no, getting back to the point in hand, it does differ book to book, the way people, I suppose, manage the work that you do. And again, that falls down to the individual. And I try and be as accommodating as possible with that.
Right.
There have been one or two times where I've sat there and gone, what you're doing now, the edits you are making, again, this is the fourth round of edits. I've had the odd person try to basically rewrite the book after the lettering stage. And that, and you kind of sit there and go, to a point, I get it, having written my own books and stuff like that.
But then you were lettering your own books as well. So it's different. Yeah.
It's different there because perhaps Mike and I work is once we've got artwork back and I've lettered it, we'll generally sit there, we'll have a Skype, you know, like a Skype call, you know what I mean? Or whichever, or Facebook Messenger or whichever it is. And we will talk it over and we'll go, well, maybe that doesn't work. You know what I mean? Or maybe that needs tweaking there and stuff like that.
Yeah. Maybe what was written doesn't work with the artwork because of a certain face the artist has drawn. You know, yeah, it looks at a different sort of emotion.
Yeah, and stuff like that, that's kind of a given. But when you've got people who basically, you come back and they go, I've got a few edits, and you're like, okay, cool.
Right.
And those few edits are a whole new script.
Right. And you, as you say, that differs from writer to writer, from book to book. That's not just on the small press side of things or the bigger comics. That really just depends on the writer or editor in question.
Yeah, it does.
So it's their personality, really.
I have to say, you know what I mean? Like 99.9% of the people I've worked with have been amazing.
Yeah.
They're really fantastic, flexible. They take on, you know, they listen to your knowledge. You know what I mean? You listen to perhaps their knowledge and stuff like that. And again, it's about kind of that transference of ideas and everything else, just because the end result is the same, isn't it?
You want to make a good book.
Exactly. The best looking book, best read, you know what I mean? Best read, you know, and have best readability to it and everything else. So it's bearing that in mind and not getting too big for your own boots.
Yeah. As we get to this point, I guess in your story, sorry, in your lettering journey, we are kind of coming towards the pandemic. So I'm going to get away from your lettering journey for a second. And we've just talked about writers and you've mentioned obviously Marius a few times and working with Mike. So I kind of want to, you know, venture back into writing and specifically Marius Comics, if that's okay.
Okay.
So I recently found an old email from yourself from 2014. It was perhaps the birth of Marius, including from what I could see was the original logo, which was kind of Marius in a speech bubble, from what I remember.
Yeah.
So on a smaller scale, obviously, it was kind of like being those early Image talks, you know. I mean, obviously, no Silvestri beach houses and stuff like that, but there was a touch of the Liefeld enthusiasm. And I know Liefeld, polarizing character, but you cannot fault his enthusiasm. The guy has a massive love for comics. And I think that shone through with yourself and obviously some of the other people involved at that point. So obviously you've kind of mentioned the decision behind Marius and where it came from. But with regards to the actual brand, its bright orange personality, you know, the very outgoing. Where did that come from?
Nobody picks orange, do they?
No.
The fact is, nobody sits there and makes a conscious decision of going, all right, we're starting a company. What color should we have? Orange. No, nobody does that. And obviously, you look at a lot of comic logos and the white or reds and everything else and stuff like that. And we, you know, it was a conscious effort between a lot of us to stand out.
Yeah.
Because, it was either go big or go home, wasn't it? Because obviously our slogan has always been We Are Comics.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean? And obviously the whole We Are Comics thing is not like, it's not meant to be big-headed, go, well, we're comics. Everybody else is just whatever. It was more a case of obviously we're a collection of people that love comics and want to make comics that we enjoy and other people will enjoy. So the fact is, you know, we are comics is more a case of obviously this the represent, you know, there's some people that are here in this group. We're, you know, we are comics. We're, you know, we're all from different walks of life, different backgrounds, and you know what I mean, and everything else. So that was kind of the point. And like I said, the lineups changed a bit through the years and stuff, but the central message has always been the same.
It's always been the same. Well, talking about the central message, you know, as I say, along with that logo, and which has changed a couple of times, but it's you know, once you decided on the light bulb, it kind of stuck, didn't it? And it's you know, it's a good fit, it's a good logo. And I'm guessing some of this is as you've mentioned, kind of probably going to have come from someone like Brad, obviously, if he's a graphic designer. But along with that sort of vibrant orange and the personality, you've just mentioned one of the slogans. Looking back to 2014, I thought to myself, there was a sense of marketing that really didn't exist, certainly in the UK comic scene at that time. You know, welcome to the future, welcome to Madius, we are comics, as you say. 2015 was the year of Madius. The advertising on the Kickstarters, you know, the run up to the likes of Thought Bubble, there was countdowns. It was there was bright, energetic posts, bright images. It, like you just say, it was all trying to catch everybody. Those marketing decisions, was this all thought out, as you say, beforehand, or was it something that you just as you went along the journey? Or because you did mention that a lot of this stuff, I guess, was thought out beforehand. You did think about this. So is it the same there with all this marketing? Because as I say, it wasn't something I can remember. Everybody was just sticking a comic out. Whereas you guys seem to really be thinking about the marketing and the sales and, as you say, your brand.
Well, to be fair, we look to other people. There's Big Punch Studios. We're a big influence. Yep. The thing is, you want to put your own spin on stuff, don't you? You know what I mean? Yeah. And obviously, used to do a lot back in the day of, what was it, reasons to be cheerful, because I used to listen to a lot of Ian Drury at the time. So I just thought it'd be really funny. And you include, like, Static and things like that. So you kind of frame it of going, well, here's what we've got coming up, and you frame it that way, and you do a Twitter thread and everything else, and you know what I mean? And it's important then. You're tagging everybody that's working on the project and things like that. So then what you're doing then is those people who are working on the project, one, they're being credited, you know what I mean? They're getting the recognition that they're working on it. Two, they're then going to share it, which means other people are going to see it. And the whole point is a cascade effect. You want in as many eyes on it as possible, I suppose.
That reach.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And obviously when it came to say collecting all the paper cuts and inkstains book into paperbacks and inkstains, we really did want to do a big countdown, you know what I mean? And obviously again with Griff Gristle was the first comic we kickstarted.
Yeah.
And Mike and I watched, you know, we looked at other people who'd done really well on Kickstarter, people like Tom Ward with the, you know, the Sensational Elephant Man and stuff like that. And obviously we were looking at what they were doing and we just thought, well, you know what I mean, wouldn't it be good if we counted down just to give people an idea? And obviously again, there's a lot of people that will follow you on social media and stuff like that, who maybe don't know that you've kind of pivoted, I suppose. You know what I mean? Like my social media account wasn't set up to be a comics promotion thing. Mm. And obviously you learn yourself, you have to become your biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
I suppose one of the big things, and you can find a lot of people who make fantastic comics and they're very introverted. And they're like, oh, you know what I mean? Someone will pay them a compliment about their artwork because their artwork might be sensational. And they'll be sat there going, oh, yeah, thanks, yeah. Cheers. Thank you very much. Thank you. Whereas you've got to be like, yes, it is. You've got to be bold and brash. And I've got bold and brash in spades.
That was very much you, as you say, you know, those countdowns to, as I say, I think it was the first Thought Bubble you were at. You know, I know the Griff Gristle one was a little bit more muted because you kind of used purples and stuff like that because it worked with the artwork that was there.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, worked with marketing. It worked with the brand because that was the color of the comic for Griff Gristle. But the Thought Bubble ones, they were orange. Normally most people, you know, they want to be cool. So, you know, it's a nice cool blue or, you know, a nice sunshine orange or something. No, you would, like you say, balls to the wall, all out there.
The fact is, right, I've never been cool. So why start now? You know what I mean? Why start now? The fact is, you want people to see what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In comics, I know everyone says we make comics for the love of making comics, and people do. You make comics for the love of making comics. The fact is, when you're making it, you want some people to read it. It's a case of jumping up and slapping someone in the face with a fish. That's what we're doing. You know what I mean? It's a case of going, look, you're either going to love it or hate it. We'll be the Marmite of comics. That's fine. You're either going to love it or hate it. We often put disclaimers before we started Kickstarters as well, saying, please be aware that we are going to be promoting a Kickstarter. If you are not bothered about it, you may want to mute us or unfollow us.
Yeah.
Because the point is, an often not spoken part of things is obviously the marathon that it is making a comic doesn't end once that last page is lettered.
No.
You've then got to get that comic seen by people. Now, if you pitched it and stuff like that, that's fine. You can maybe play the fishing game, I suppose. You know what I mean? You cast your reels out and you sit back and you're patient. I'm impatient. Mike's pretty impatient. You know what I mean? A lot of the people that we work with are pretty impatient. So it's a case of, right, okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to do this. Now, we self-published the first kind of books we did, the Paper Cuts and Ink Stains books. We self-published them. We do them in small runs. They were black and white to start with and everything else. And so doing Griff Gristle was a really scary thing because it initially started out as a Paper Cuts and Ink Stains story.
Yes, yeah. I think I saw some of the early black and white sketches, yeah.
Yeah, so it's initially going to be a black and white Paper Cuts and Ink Stains thing. And like, it was, Griff Gristle was Mike's idea. Mike Sandberg kind of came up with the idea of Griff Gristle, this guy, and obviously this kind of aquatic John Constantine. Yeah, and Rory Donald was the first person that we approached it because I love his art. He'd just done a story for it called Cast Adrift, which was kind of like aliens and things like that. And it's a guy kind of having to deal with, like, he's alone on a ship and it crashes and stuff like that. And then there's aliens and things. And I love this stuff. And it's very Mike Mignola. It's very Gabriel Barr. And it just, like I say, it just all seemed to fit. And then Rory kind of ran away with the character design. That was it. All character design was all Rory. We just said kind of old grizzled, you know what I mean? What was it? The thing we use is the term is crusty Fisher punk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's very much a child of the 80s. You know, his Griff, he loves his 80s punk. He loves his 80s new wave, goth, stuff like that. And that's very evident within the book. And so we were really scared to do a Kickstarter. Really scared. Because it's like, well, if it fails, it's a spectacular fail. And so we really didn't want to fail. So we wanted people to know it was coming and we wanted people to know it was happening.
Yep.
That's where the idea of a countdown kind of came and goes, it's 7 days. Ooh, you know what I mean? You've got 7 days to shut me up.
Even on the final day, there was hourly countdowns, weren't there?
Yeah, like, we did. We kind of went to like 12 hours to everything else and stuff. And then we pressed the button early because we do it every time. But it's funny. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of do it on purpose because, you know, we're mischievous and stuff. But it's a case of, obviously, you've got to get the word out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one's got, you know, you'll have people who are friends or people who, you know what I mean, have read your stuff and they're supporting you and stuff like that. But no marketing firm's going to do it. Time Warner aren't going to step in and go, here, it's all right, son, we've got you. You know what I mean?
You got to do it yourself. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's important to kind of be imaginative, I guess. And so that, yeah, it was a very conscious kind of thing of going, we don't want this book to fail. This is our first Kickstarter. We're very scared, but we can't show you that we're scared.
No,
because that's not going to sell you any books, is it? People are going to look there and go, look at those scared buggers. You know what I mean? And stuff. And so it's a case of obviously going, you know, it's basically that kind of Bart Simpson thing where he's wearing a pan on his head and he's got pans and he's banging again. You know what I mean? Going, quiet, quiet. You know what I mean? So that, it's basically going, look, here, we're the town criers. Hear ye, you know, back this book. And so that's kind of where it came from, was about, obviously, a lot of the time it's projecting confidence. Again, and obviously, we've all got different personalities in Madius. You know what I mean? All of us have got different. Brad's a very quiet person. Brad will sit back and he will wear a strange hat at the table and everything else. And he'll turn up to Thought Bubble and he designed all sorts of mad kind of point of sale stuff and everything else and gone, look what I've done. And you're just going, all right, bud, that's fantastic, amazing. Let's do it. You know what I mean? And stuff like that. So he'll deal with a lot of, like, do bits like that. And he likes to kind of sit in the background doing that kind of stuff.
So his being outgoing is shown through, like you say, his hats and the stuff that he's putting out there, as opposed to his at the table shouting and hollering and letting everybody know who he is. Yeah.
This is it. Yeah. You know, and obviously, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely the loudest one. But Mike's more intelligent than me. Mike's smarter, you know what I mean, in the way he kind of deals with stuff. So Mike will kind of take like those kind of angles and stuff. And it doesn't always work. But the fact is, if you don't try, you'll never know.
Exactly. Yeah. And the only way you fail really is by not trying, to be fair. So we talk about that sort of period, 2015 to sort of 2018 or so. And as I say, looking at all these books, I don't think there are many small press or indie publishers that could keep up with the production that you guys were putting out there, you know, content and variety. Anthologies like Paper Cuts and Ink Stains, Griff Crystal Adventures, comedy titles, Ramlock Investigates, and there were horror books, obviously, like Our Air, etc. So was there a map for all these different books, or was it just a case of, you know, like Image, just the creators come up with them and say, yep, that'll go out next? Or was there a map? Was there thought gone into this, or was it just a case of cast those bullets out and let's just see what we hit?
Pretty much, yeah. We call it the shotgun approach, yeah. Which was like fire wide. Hopefully, stuff might hit the target. You know, it was basically a case of we'd work on lots of different stuff at once. We'd come up with a lot of ideas, and we'd work on those, and we'd get the stories down. It helped them being shorts. Short stories was a lot easier to kind of do, and you could produce quite a lot. You know, it's the same with things like, say, Prophets of Doom, obviously from the Paper Cuts and Ink Stains thing.
Yeah,
that came from me listening to the song Prophets of Doom by Clutch. I was walking home one day from dropping my stepson then at the time at school and walking home, and I was listening to this song, and I just thought, haha, wouldn't it be funny if you had a load of like ridiculous cultists and they were useless and then they kind of accidentally on purpose brought about it. Wouldn't that be funny? And then that's where that came from. That kind of progressed into what it was. There is more coming, you know what I mean? Like, we did slow down like the last 2 years because to keep up with, like you say, the speed at which we were moving,
yeah,
did become quite difficult. And obviously life gets in the way.
So during that 3 or 4 year period with both Marius and yourself as a letterer, there were some accolades and some awards, both nominated and won as well. British Comic Awards. You were named as the Outhouses Indie Creators to Watch, to being named as the Ashcan Best Letterer 2 or 3 years in a row.
It was 2 or 3 years in a row. Yeah. People voted on that and stuff. Like, you saw that vote going in real time. That was a very strange thing to see. And you sat there thinking, no way am I beating Jim Campbell. What's going on here? You know what I mean? Taylor Esposito. Why am I not beating Taylor Esposito? You know what I mean? And stuff like that. And so, yeah, that was weird. And obviously, yeah, thinking about it, I forgot about that Outhouses thing.
Only the success he is.
Makes me sound so big. I'd completely forgotten about that.
To be fair, as I say, the last few years have been kind of quite hectic for you as a letterer. And as you say, you've got to move on to the next job and you've got to keep working and keep improving, et cetera, et cetera. So moving on then, there's been a lot of changes in, you know, the comics industry and obviously life as a whole over these last 12 months. How has the lockdown been for you working as a letterer? And then what prompted you in March of this year, 2021, to decide, I am going to do this full time. I am going to go as a freelancer.
All right. So lettering wise, it was spotty to start with. I think because obviously people were concerned. You know what I mean? Nobody knew what was happening and everything else and stuff like that. And you start to see a real uptick in creativity.
People were told to down tools, weren't they, in 2020? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and obviously I wasn't afforded that luxury. You know what I mean?
No.
So if we're taking it from like March last year, I think obviously May time, June time, things started to pick up. I mean, foolishly, I ran my own Kickstarter campaign back then as well with Matt Hardy from Mad Robot Comics. We co-wrote a book together.
Yeah. Was that Helen Stalingrad?
Helen Stalingrad. And yeah. It was terrifyingly successful. We did not envisage it going as big as it did. We thought we'd hit $3,000-$4,000. And it went to like 11,500, which was terrifying.
Wow. Yeah.
600 backers. I drew the long straw there. Matt drew the short straw because Matt decided he was going to send all the books out. So that was, you know what I mean? Like Matt had that issue, and obviously everything else with COVID and stuff, that became really stressful because obviously things were delayed, again, through no fault of anybody's. No. You know what I mean? Like postage delays, all this kind of stuff, because everybody needed to stay safe.
Sorry to step in there. Matt works in a comic shop as well, doesn't he? So I guess there was an awful lot of stress going on with, you didn't know what was happening. Marvel and DC were deciding to make all sorts of decisions. You know, you weren't sure how the business was going to cope. And so, yeah, I guess there was an awful lot of stress there.
A lot of stress there, you know, and obviously he dealt with that side of stuff. But Matt and I had always threatened one another with writing together. You know what I mean? And so we did. And obviously we worked with Russell McEwen, who did a cover for Tragic Tales of Horror. I think he did issue 2 cover.
Yep.
And he was the first person that I spoke to about drawing Helen Stalingrad, because I love his stuff. His stuff's very, very abstract, but also very realistic at times. So he has like this really good mix, and obviously that's what we wanted for the book. We effectively wanted to deconstruct a kind of pulp comic, like a two panel okay. a page commando pulp, you know, digest size. And that's what we did. We went digest size of it, digest format. We're really lucky because I was talking about it with PJ Holden and he said he'd do a cover. So we had PJ Holden, 2000 AD, you know what I mean, stuff like that. World of Tanks did this wonderful cover for us. And obviously it took a while to gestate. It took like the 2 years from obviously 2018 onwards, and it took a while to kind of gestate and formulate. And then we went, boom, go, we're doing it. And so, yeah, that was good. But again, like I say, that was around May, June. And that's when you started to see kind of an uptick in lettering jobs. And then, like I say, one job would kind of lead to another. And then you'd have somebody else kind of recommending you for something because you did a good job, or someone would share stuff. And I started to try and be a little bit more kind of, what's the word? Organized, I suppose, in like my website, in how I did things, in how I presented my portfolio on it and stuff like that. Especially coming up to like March of this year.
Yeah.
I started to kind of quietly make changes on my website, tidy it up, re-kind of brand it a bit, I suppose, and stuff like that. Have a think about how to do the logo and everything else.
Yeah.
And obviously I'd really kind of fallen out of love with my job. You know what I mean? Like with social care and stuff, it really burnt me out.
Not surprising.
And started a new job and I really wasn't feeling it. I was trying my hardest, you know what I mean? Because obviously you don't want to be kind of unemployed. And then, see, I don't know how much I can mention because I'm trying to think about contracts.
Yep, no, that's fine, mate. You be careful here, yep.
I was very lucky to get some people approach me who were kind of like a kind of, you know what I mean? Like it ties back to like some of the first comics I own or I ever owned. I approached me about working on some stuff and they approached me and that was really weird. You know what I mean? Again, but it was sharing like my portfolio. And obviously during the lockdown period, I've got to work on stuff with Matt, who had a story accepted by Heavy Metal. And obviously that was Cyberarchy, and that was really good. And being able to say, shit, I'm going to work. Scott, I swore, there we go.
That's all right, mate.
I'm going to have stuff in Heavy Metal. Heavy Metal's such an influential comic and stuff, you know, and that's fantastic. And then you've got, like I say, other things I've been working with, Scout Comics and a lot of stuff, Behemoth Comics, working. They're another one to watch. They're another indie press to watch. Behemoth are doing really well. They've just signed I swear they've just signed some deals with some already existing kind of IP and stuff like that. And they've got some like film rights being talked about for some of their stuff, everything else. And I landed some stuff doing that and like some longer form jobs like OGNs, you know what I mean? And original graphic novels, if people don't know that, you know what I mean? And then some larger anthologies, like being able to letter the whole thing, which was a big challenge. That was a lot of fun and also horribly scary.
Because I guess you'd had to change the lettering styles between each story, etc. Yeah.
That's why I'm really glad I learned to diversify my styles and stuff. And I learned new things whilst doing that as well, new styles. And obviously you get new fonts and you sit there and look at it and go, how can I rip this apart and do this differently and everything else and stuff like that. So yeah, it really, really, really started to kind of snowball, if I'm honest with you. And then, like I say, I started to be... Like we said, obviously, I'm always very vocal. I'm a very loud, vocal, brash person. And, you know, I started to really kind of push the lettering side of stuff. We put Madius on hiatus last year. We kind of really didn't do anything Madius. Like, Helen Stalingrad was kind of a cross thing, like I say, obviously. So Madius and Mad Robot are reflected on that, you know what I mean, and stuff. But we kind of said, no. Mike has kind of pre-existing conditions and stuff like that, you know what I mean, without wanting to go too into stuff and everything else. And obviously the pandemic really kind of shook him. I was really busy and it shook me, you know what I mean, stuff like that. So we made a kind of conscious decision to go, right, stop. We're going to pause, put the pause button. You know what I mean? And it's only like the last few months we've kind of started building stuff up again. Obviously we're Bun on Kickstarter for Mike at the moment. Griff 4 is trundling into production.
It is.
Which is exciting, you know what I mean? Obviously, Mike and I had a video chat about that the other day and discussing where we want to take everything and stuff. There is a script there, but it's about to be chopped up and turned around and everything else and stuff like that, which is going to be really cool. Because looking back on it, it was written about a year ago. And you kind of look at it and you go, right, no, maybe this works differently. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
We're slowly but surely kind of charging the engines up. You know what I mean? We've got other bits we've been working on and things like that. And we're getting ready to kind of like, we're winding the toy in a sense. You know what I mean? That rubber band is being turned. And you'll hear about it all again because we'll just be like, bah. You know what I mean? It'd be like Hans Zimmer, just like, blah, just everywhere, you know. So we'll be doing that. But it started to snowball. And then, like I say, in March, early March, I was there and I had a really like rubbish day at the new job. And I was looking at stuff. And then I got emails like offering me this job or offering me this like lettering job and everything else and stuff like that. And I was talking to my partner and she was looking at stuff. She's like, could you do it?
Yeah.
And you're sitting down, you're looking at numbers and stuff like that. And you're going, I could. She's like, why don't you? I went, all right then. And I quit.
And that was it. That easy.
I just sent a message in saying, look, this isn't for me. It's not working. Please accept this as my formal, you know, notice of resignation. I've had some opportunities land in my lab that I've wanted for a very long time and I'm going to pursue them. And I was saying to, like I say, saying to Nell, my girlfriend, you know what I mean? Even if it lasts 6 months, again, it falls back to the whole, you don't know if you don't try.
Exactly. And you only fail if you don't try. So.
Exactly. And so geared up the engines for that and used the kind of things we used to do with Maddius and everything else. And obviously how to kind of present yourself and stuff like that. You see me popping up looking for lettering jobs on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like the page is there. It'll often be, you know what I mean? Prefaced by an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Hello there. GIF, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. I do that on purpose. Because people will go, oh, it's him. Oh, it's him. Good. Oh, no, it's him. Bugger off. You know what I mean? But again, it's about stuff like that. And so, again, I've been lucky to have stuff passed to me by other letterers and stuff they maybe can't fit in their schedule. And you're looking at stuff, you're looking at things going, can't fit this in your schedule. And it's this, and that can keep me going for like 3 months. And you kind of sat there going, well, all right. And you just doing it. And again, I suppose it's luck. It's about obviously what you've kind of put into stuff. You know what I mean? And it's stuff being paid back. So yeah, it was a case of, if not now, when?
Exactly.
And I had the opportunity and I just thought, bugger it.
Going to go for it. Well, and you just mentioned there about other letterers, et cetera. And one I noticed that you have credited in helping you achieve going freelance is a guy, Hassan Otsmane. I'm probably going to murder this now. Otsmane Halau, is it, I think?
Just call him Hass.
Hass, you're right, okay.
Because again, it's a case of, I don't want to mispronounce his surname.
He is a designer and letterer. He's worked in Image, Only Press, Aftershock, you know, plenty of places. So how did you get involved with the likes of him and somebody else, Jock, who thanked you recently for a great job on a book with him?
That was cool. Hass, again, we've kind of known each other through like the indie circuit stuff like that for quite a while. You know what I mean? And for a time at like different cons, it'd be a case of who turned up in the loudest floral shirt.
Right.
You know what I mean? And stuff like that. Hass always wears very cool, like he's always got awesome shirts. You know what I mean? He's just such a really nice, approachable person. And he's so helpful in obviously kind of guiding you. You know what I mean? Like with your work and seeing his stuff. His stuff's always great. It's always great.
Yeah.
His work is fantastic. And it's always different. Each project that he does, it's always different. It's always got a really great, unique kind of style to it. And his eye for design is fantastic. And he does obviously panel by panel. He curates that. And obviously Strip Panel Naked on YouTube. And Hass has really helped me out. Obviously, since going fully freelance and stuff like that, he's passed me at least 3 to 4 jobs.
Brilliant.
You know what I mean? He's said, like, obviously, I'm really busy. However, I can recommend, and he recommends me. And then they'll come to me and I go, yep. Stuff, you know what I mean? And obviously, from doing that, it's really kind of, it's enabled the lights to stay on.
Brilliant.
What was really fantastic was, obviously, I worked, Jock did the cover to Nick Nevin and the Bloody Queen, which is a humanoids book.
Okay, yeah.
And what was really cool about that was Fabrice Sapolsky was editor of that. And obviously Fabrice did Spider-Man Noir and I interviewed him. And it was almost like things kind of like, I suppose, kind of coming back full circle. And that was a great book to work on. You know what I mean? Helen Mullane, who wrote it, she's fantastic. It was her first book. But obviously, as far as I'm aware, she, like I say, she got in contact with Dom Reardon, and Dom Reardon's a fantastic artist. And like I say, that I believe that obviously they know Jock, and Jock was like, yeah, I'll do a cover. And all of a sudden you've worked on a book which you've got Jock on the cover, you know what I mean, and stuff, which is just fantastic. And his Jock is, like I say, he's like comic superstar.
He is.
If you know comics, you know who Jock is and stuff like that. And it was the same with, like, back in the day when obviously when Comic House were doing their anthology series.
Yep. Another title you've lettered.
Yeah, I have, and written for. Mike and I wrote something for that called Homeopathos, which is the idea of obviously like a homeopath using kind of mind control stuff to steal the life essence from people. And we did that. And who does our cover? Who does the cover to our story? Derek Robertson.
Somebody else you've interviewed.
Well, this is it. And obviously you kind of keep up with people and you speak to people and stuff like that. I'm not saying me and Derek are like this, you know, we're not like, you know, but we speak and stuff like that, you know. And obviously the thing is, people who are kind of comic superstars, obviously Derek Robertson, The Boys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Transmet and stuff like that. Derek's, you know, his stuff that he's done is hot stuff right now. And obviously to get kind of like a recommendation from that or from Jock or for anyone else, you know what I mean, is just, it's mind-boggling.
Well, I've got to be honest with you, as I lead us out now, I had one final question about the future, which I don't really need to ask because you pretty much answered it over the last hour, to be honest with you. It was really about coming out of the pandemic and going forward, where you saw yourself and Madius going into 2022. But obviously, you know, you kind of explained that you've got work on the go. It's Rob Jones and his luck is he's going to keep going from job to job. And obviously Madius has had another break and you're obviously looking to breathe a bit more life back into Madius and go from there.
Kind of a more curated kind of one, I think. Not with the same reckless abandon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a bit more kind of planned abandon, I think, more than anything else. You know what I mean? It'd be a lot more kind of structured, but like we'll still bring our same kind of energy to stuff. You know what I mean? When cons come back, because they bloody well better.
Yeah.
We will be front and center. You know what I mean? And we'll be there being the dancing monkeys that we are.
Well, I guess, as you say, you know, you need a little bit more, as you say, less reckless abandon with Madius, simply because obviously with the lettering job, you've got to have a few more things planned. So finishing up, obviously I need to thank you. I want to thank you very much, Rob, for coming on tonight and speaking to me.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Where can we find Rob Jones, the professional letterer, and obviously the writer of Madius Comics online? Where the best place to get hold of you? And
okay, so Twitter, because being a letterer, you have to have rights in your name. So on Twitter, you can find me at Rob Jones Rights, which makes things very, very confusing. If someone, it's another Rob Jones letters, but I'm not changing it. It's been my handle for a very long time now, and I'm not sure, because it used to be Hulk Smash 1985. And that got changed. So you'll find me there. If you go to Facebook, just search Rob Jones Lettering. You'll see it there with the new logo, which has got all sorts of different kind of, it's an amalgamation of lots of different like comic panels from comics I've worked on and stuff like that.
Looks great.
I do need to get a .com. That's one of the things I've overlooked right now. But obviously, if you type in Rob Jones Lettering into Google, it will bring you up to my WordPress, which will have everything, which has got all my portfolio and everything else and stuff like that. So if you wanted to have a look at the kind of stuff I've done, or if you look at some of the, like say, indie comics from the UK indie comic scene, you know what I mean? I've worked in things like Alex Automatic, which you can have a look in and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Or like say Comic House and everything else, where you can find Madius books on Comic House and things like Comixology and stuff like that.
It's pretty much every other UK comic scene book is a Rob Jones lettered comic. Well, all that's left for me to say really is, as I say, to thank you again, once again, for coming onto the podcast, Rob, and to wish you all the best in 2021 and obviously 2022 and beyond. 2022, perhaps the year of the Rob Jones?
No, we'll see. Let's see if I can kind of, you know, wangle my way with some kind of Rob Jones luck into working on some Parker luck. I'd love to work on some Spider-Man. You know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Like I say, never say never.
Thanks for coming on, Rob.
Thank you guys. Cheers, very mate. Much.
Thank you.